A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards, but I'm pretty sure you knew that by now. Join us on the program today, Laura Carno going to be with us from Faster, Colorado. We will get an update on what they're doing with the Faster, Colorado Training Arms School staff, but do want to talk more broadly about the gun control bills that have been introduced in Denver this year. There are a number of them, many of them borrowing liberally from California's gun control regime, which I guess should not be a surprise. We are seeing the Californication of Virginia right now, and the Californication of Colorado has been underway for quite some time. But, you know, when we talk about these bills in places like, you know, California, New York, sometimes we'll talk about we need to stop them there because they don't just stay in these states. And that's exactly what we're seeing with, you know, bills to require background checks for gun barrels, bills going after, you know, 3D printing of firearms, more regulations and restrictions on FFLs. Speaking of that, by the way, SB 17 in New Mexico, which is the combo bill, right? Not only is it the broadest semi-auto ban in U.S. history, it would ban the sale and manufacture and transfer of all gas-operated center-fire semi-automatic firearms that can accept a detachable magazine. So forget your features test. Forget, you know, listing out makes and models. This basically just says every semi-automatic firearm or every semi-automatic rifle anyway on the market prohibited for sale, as well as putting in place all kinds of new restrictions and mandates for FFLs. You know, they need to start paying for these expensive video surveillance systems. You've got to have, you know, all kinds of other security upgrades. That bill, SB 17, is passed out of the state Senate. Was heard in its first House committee on Wednesday evening, and it passed out of that committee 6-5, with, I believe, every Democrat voting in favor, every Republican opposed. So it's got, I believe, one more stop in House Judiciary. If it's not defeated there, then it goes to the House floor. And if it's not defeated there, it goes to Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, who will trip over herself in her eagerness to sign that bill into law. She has been pushing for a semi-auto ban for several years. The legislature in New Mexico has turned her down every time. I don't know what arms are being twisted, what promises have been made, but it does strike me as very unusual that just last year, the legislature did not give her the gun ban bill she wanted, and yet this year seems poised to do so when it's even worse than what it was last session. We'll be talking with Zach Ford from the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association about this next week on a Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. But things are moving quickly in New Mexico. It's a 30-day budget session. They're more than halfway through. So, you know, I know that gun owners in New Mexico, you don't need me to remind you, you've been turning out in force some 80-plus thousand signatures to a petition opposing SB 17. It dropped off yesterday. New Mexico gun owners are doing everything they can. I would just encourage them to keep up that work. And if you are a New Mexico gun owner, thank you for speaking up and speaking out in defense of your Second Amendment rights. And again, I just encourage you, keep it up, because even if the majority of Democrats aren't listening right now, at least from what we've seen in the Senate and this House committee, I am still hopeful that if this bill reaches the House floor, you will have some rural House Democrats who will take a stand against this flagrant infringement of our constitutional rights. Yeah, it's been weird, actually. There's been acknowledgement by some Democrats that, yeah, this may actually violate the Constitution, but I'm going to go ahead and vote for it anyway. Again, don't understand that philosophy. I would think that if there's any question, you'd want to err on the side of being constitutionally sound, but maybe pleasing the governor and giving her a going-away present in the form of a gun ban. Maybe that's more important to them. All right, anyway, enough about New Mexico. Let's turn our attention to New Mexico's neighbor to the north, Colorado, where, again, a number of gun control bills introduced and already seeing action this session. Let's talk about it with Laura Carno from Faster Colorado. Take a look and a listen. Laura, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, Colorado is one of those states now where you've got so much gun control It's hard to imagine that they can come up with a lot more, but they're very creative over in the gun control lobby. And so once again, you all are dealing with a number of bills that are going after your right to keep your arms. I haven't seen anything that would go after armed school staff this session. Is that right? Are they leaving you guys alone at Faster Colorado?
This time, okay. Yeah, 2 years ago, they tried. That was the first year that we had to retain representation at the Capitol so that we could fight against it. And we did. We actually joined with the teachers union and some other folks in killing it because it was an anti-local control kind of bill is how other folks saw it. So we had a great coalition of folks and killed it, but that was 2 years ago. So far, so good, but we think that retaining somebody to represent us at the Capitol is a forever thing now, which is unfortunate because that's comes with a little price tag. So
yeah. But I'm glad that they are at least leaving you guys alone. I wish that they were leaving gun owners and FFLs alone, but that is not the case this time around. So what are some of the big gun control bills that they're pushing in Denver right now?
Yeah, so here's how I'm looking at it this year, Cam, is sort of the, what do they call it, death by 1,000 paper cuts. Mm-hmm. So it gives the left the ability to say, we're not banning guns, we're not taking guns, but they are at every step making it more difficult for law-abiding gun owners, for, as you mentioned, for FFLs, and now for hobbyists who are doing things with 3D printers and some other equipment, even going after digital files, even if the digital files were never used to make a component, just owning and sharing digital files could become a crime. I mean, I have never seen anything like it from, like I said, all of these paper cuts, one after another, after another.
Yeah. And, I wrote about the 3D printing bill at Bearing Arms just a couple of days ago. And it's interesting. I mean, we've seen, so what they're doing in Colorado is a little bit different than what we're seeing in like Washington State and New York, where they're actually going after the printers themselves. Right. And saying, if you can print a firearm component, then, possession of these printers is illegal. So they're trying to force these companies to put blocks in place so that you can't use their product to, print a firearm component. But those bills define firearm components so broadly that, a spring or a screw, something that is not necessarily confined solely to a firearm, can be considered a component. It is a mess. Unfortunately, I think for you guys, there was somebody a little bit brighter writing the Colorado bill because it manages to avoid some of those pitfalls. They're not going after the machines. They define firearm component, I believe, as an unfinished frame or receiver and a couple of other things. But, it's not just every part that could be used in a gun. But it still, to me, flies in the face of our right to keep and bear arms, which I think inherently includes the right to acquire, which it would encompass the right to build, right? We have a national tradition of building guns for personal use in the United States that long predates the Second Amendment. And that right doesn't change just because it's become easier to do so, right? Just because you don't have to own a forge now, you can own a 3D printer. It's easier for us to use our First Amendment rights than it was in 1776. But that doesn't diminish our right to free speech or to disseminate our views. And yet that's kind of the tone that the Democrats in Denver are taking here, right? Is that it should be really difficult. It should be really hard for you to make a gun. And if it's not, if it's too easy, well, then it should be illegal.
Right. And what it goes to is this complete disregard for not just our rights, but for reality. Because you look at, if you look at the bad guys who are doing violent things with firearms that typically they've stolen or somehow acquired like that, none of these laws are going to stop bad people from doing violent things with firearms, whether they're stolen, purchased, 3D printed, whatever. Every one of these paper cuts goes after normal people who are not breaking any laws. And there's a 2A activist here in Colorado, Leslie Hollywood, who also wrote something about this bill. She keeps an eye on 2A stuff at the legislature. And she had actually been to a town hall and recorded this town hall with one of these the legislators. And you know, he talked about it in exactly those terms that you're talking about. And you talk about the First Amendment. So, like, what to a liberal? What if they said, "Well, you can write an article, but you can't use technology. You can't use AI to write an article." Mm-hmm. Like, to me, this feels very similar. This is a constitutional right that we have. So it's sort of that two-headed monster. You've got not only is it unconstitutional, but it's also not going to work. And Cam, you and I are old enough to remember back in 2013 when some state senators were recalled over their gun control votes. And we talked at that time that they said these gun bills were going to make us safer. We knew that wasn't true. But now we've got 13 years, going on 13 years of data to say gun bills passed. Here's where the crime was, including violent crime. Now, 13 years later, here's where we are. And all violent crime has spiked. Well, it's going down across the country, not so in Colorado. And so what they say is, let's double down and let's make things even more difficult, right, for law-abiding citizens. And what we know about law-abiding citizens is we follow the laws, and criminals know that. And they are more emboldened because they don't think that they are going to be met with resistance to the extent that they were in the past. And, you know, shame on Jared Polis, who, by the way, wants to run for president. The whole country needs to know that he's not a libertarian governor. He's been terrible for our state.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that that really should be hung around his neck when he runs for president. He owns the crime increase here.
Absolutely, he does. And Senator John Hickenlooper, I think, bears some responsibility as well. And Polis, I had to roll my eyes a couple weeks ago when, you know, he comes out and he says, right after the filing deadline in U.S. versus Hamani, which deals with the possession of firearms by unlawful users of drugs. And he comes out right after the filing deadline for amicus briefs and says, this shouldn't be an issue. You should be able to own firearms and use marijuana. The attorney general there in Colorado, Phil Weiser, had put his name on an amicus brief arguing that the law should be upheld in its entirety. And again, you know, Polis waits until there's nothing legally he can do to weigh in, right? And then he weighs in doesn't make a big stink about the attorney general taking the opposite stance. I mean, it was the most weaselly form of support for the Second Amendment that I've seen in quite some time. So, yeah, not a fan of Governor Polis. I want to ask you about, sadly, unfortunately, there are a lot of bad bills we could focus on, and we have a pretty limited amount of time here. But in addition to the 3D printing ban, there's also the bill that would require background checks on gun barrels. This is another one that they are basically stolen from California. And they're also looking at expanding who can institute a red flag petition. And this one, Laura, I got to say, it's really concerning to me because, you know, when Colorado's red flag law was first introduced, it was family members in law enforcement, as I recall. Those were the people who could petition, right? And then apparently not enough petitions were filed. And so, we got to make it easier for other people to file. So then it becomes, you know, educators, district attorneys, healthcare professionals, a whole universe of people. And it's still not enough red flag petitions have been filed. So now they want to make it so that institutions can apply for a red flag petition against somebody. And one of my concerns is that in Colorado law, if you file a petition based on false information, that's a crime. And we actually saw that a woman whose son was tragically killed by law enforcement. She blamed police. She ended up filing a red flag petition against the officer, I believe. And she ended up being sentenced to jail time for that. What happens if an institution knowingly files a petition with false information? Who gets punished in that?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know if it's if that piece of it is detailed or if that will
I haven't seen it
come out in any Yeah. And, you know, potentially the question comes up and it gets amended, but what's the answer? You know, is it the person who signed it or what have you? And this is, again, more paper cuts. I love that you're saying that they keep doing this because they haven't gotten enough ERPOs filed. And I think you're exactly right. It's not that, hey, we have this red flag law and gosh, some stuff got through and it didn't get caught. And so we need to make it tighter. It is not that. There is no problem that this is solving, other than they wanted more of these red flag orders to go through so that more people could lose their firearms. But it, you know, but the kind of the joke here is, what's next? Your dog can file an ERPO on you? I mean, who's left after they've you know, have added, you know, doctors and teachers and institutions and all this kind of stuff, you know, your mm-hmm. livestock, your, you know, I don't know what's next.
Right. I guess maybe dispensary employees, who knows?
Sure.
She'll be on board with that. You know, and again, I mean, going back, you and I are both old enough to recall the original debate over these red flag laws in Colorado, and supporters of these red flag laws talked about the ERPO law a lot like Democrats talked about abortion in the 90s, right? They wanted it to be safe, legal, and rare. They talked about how this would not be used a great deal, right? These were, you know, for extraordinary circumstances. But you're right. As soon as the law gets put in place, then the metric becomes, well, how many of these have been issued? You know, and it's not even a matter of, you know, how many were denied, right? They don't want to talk about the denials.
Right.
And they don't want to talk about, you know, I've seen one study that says for every, I think it's for every 11 to 21 red flag petitions that are filed, like one suicide is prevented, which begs the question, okay, well, what about the other 10 to 20 petitions, right? Were these individuals who never posed a risk of themselves or others in the first right. place? Were these individuals who went on to take their lives in another means, you know, by another means? I would say that something with a, you know, when the supporters are saying, look, this has a 5 to 10% success rate, to me, that's not great. And there are a lot of problems here, not with just with the due process protections or the lack thereof. But again, the inherent idea, you know, Colorado has a mental health crisis, right? You guys are woefully short in both inpatient treatment beds for those in acute crisis,
yep.
outpatient opportunities. And rather than address that, the Democrats say, well, let's just slap a Band-Aid on it, right? We'll take the guns away from somebody and we'll call the problem solved.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it points to people who have a political agenda of removing guns from polite society, as opposed to people who can, in a sober way, look at what the problem is, what solutions have been documented to make the problem better and not worse, and then pursue those solutions. And we know where lots of law-abiding people have few restrictions on the ability to own and carry and so forth firearms, crime is very, very low. Just, you know, look at school shootings in gun-free zones. That's why the bad guys keep picking those locations. They know that they're not going to likely run into somebody who is going to shoot back at them. So we know what works. The data is out there, but they have a political agenda that is more important to them by and large than actually solving the problem.
Yeah. Well, and again, speaking of solving the problem, I mean, again, I should mention what you guys are doing at Faster Colorado. Training armed school staff so they can serve as that first line of defense. If God forbid somebody comes into a school like we just saw in Canada and tries to, you know, kill as many people as possible. I am assuming that things are going well with Faster Colorado, that you all are still hearing from school districts around the state who are wanting to have their staff to have this opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going into our 10th training year, if you can believe that. So yeah, we're continuing to train schools. Sadly, we get upticks in interest when there is a school shooting because schools, you know, kind of it bubbles to the surface. But a couple of new things. One, we've started offering a rifle class because there are schools that have rifles in safes because that's what a cop is going to grab. if he pulls up to the scene of a school shooting, he's grabbing his rifle. Mm-hmm. And so there are schools that have opted to go that way, so that if they know they're going to be on their own for 20 minutes and they've got long hallways, you gotta have everything the bad guy has. The other interesting thing, Cam, is we were awarded a grant by the Office of School Safety here in Colorado, which is under the Department of Public Safety, to train law enforcement to respond to school shootings. So we've kind of doubled our classes this year because of that. It's actually pretty busy. And we're focusing on those rural areas where law enforcement officers don't often get a chance to get that advanced training that, let's say, folks in the Denver metro area have a lot of access to that. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing our classes out to rural areas, which are coincidentally, or not coincidentally, similar areas where there are faster trained schools, so that we're the right ones to teach them. Here's what you're going to see when you get to that school that has armed staff. Here's what we're teaching the armed staff to do once you, law enforcement, arrive, so that we have the best chance possible of not having any, anybody shot that, you know, is really a first responder in that school. So we're super excited about that. And it's a real feather in the cap of Faster Colorado that the state of Colorado saw us as a premier provider, not just of school staff, but actually of law enforcement.
That is fantastic. I want to have you back to talk more about that, because that is one of the common arguments we hear against arming school staff, right? Is that, well, you know, police are going to show up and they're not going to know who the bad guy is, who the good guy is. Sounds like what you're doing is related exactly to that question. So maybe in the next couple of weeks, we can have you back and kind of dive deeper into what that training looks like.
Yeah, you bet. I'd love to.
Laura, listen, I always appreciate you spending time with us. I'm glad to know that things are going well with Faster Colorado. I'm sorry that the Democrats are still trying to run roughshod over your right to keep bare arms there. But thank you for everything you're doing to keep gun owners free and to keep students safe there in the Centennial State. And look forward to doing this again very soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And thanks to Laura for joining us on the program. And I'm actually kind of glad we ended on that positive note. Looking forward to learning more about that training here before long. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of California. Burglars who were caught breaking into Palos Verdes home during a landslide emergency have been sentenced. These burglars were armed, by the way, when they were caught by police. There was an alert homeowner who had not evacuated who saw this car parked where it should not have been. And informed police. Police came out. They ended up arresting these individuals. One of the two, 37-year-old man, convicted of felony conspiracy to commit robbery, felony possession of a concealed firearm in a vehicle. His 42-year-old female accomplice, convicted of felony conspiracy to commit robbery. And the sentence that was handed down, the 37-year-old man got 2 years in state prison with 2 years suspended. The 42-year-old woman was given 2 years probation. So, essentially, a get-out-of-jail-free card for planning on committing burglary in this neighborhood where homes have been evacuated again because of this landslide. They say crime doesn't pay. But in California, it apparently doesn't hurt you too much if you're caught. At least if you're caught before breaking into a home, right? Maybe if they'd been caught after they'd broken in and there was stolen goods found in their car, I don't know, maybe he would have gotten a 3-year suspended sentence. I don't know. But, you get caught. You get caught with a so-called assault weapon. You're going to be doing more time than what these individuals received for planning on breaking into homes and taking advantage of people who had been forced to evacuate because of this landslide. Today's Armed Citizen story from Colorado, as a matter of fact. A murder charge dropped. Investigation shows self-defense in Loveland apartment shooting. You know, we've talked about this before. Just because you act in self-defense, it doesn't mean that it's going to be, easy for the police to make that determination. You still are going to need an attorney. You may very well face charges. There's a bill actually introduced in Wyoming this session. It died, unfortunately. But it would have required counties to reimburse individuals who were charged and later saw those charges either dropped or were acquitted because they acted in self-defense. Counties would have to pay their attorney's fees, which to me makes sense. I mean, again, if you did not commit a crime, you shouldn't go bankrupt because you were forced to defend yourself in court after you defended yourself from physical violence. But yeah, even in Wyoming, that's a struggle. There were opponents who said, listen, this is going to cost counties a lot of money. Will it really? Are there a lot of people who are falsely charged or who are acquitted after this? But whatever, it needed a two-thirds majority to get formally introduced in this year's budget session. Couldn't even get a simple majority. It died 29-32. I'm hoping that it is going to come back next year. But this is one of the cases that if it had happened in Wyoming, this individual would likely at least have been able to be compensated for the cost of hiring an attorney before these charges were dropped. The case itself, actually more than 2 years old, January 8th, 2024, a 911 caller reported that shots had been fired at an apartment complex in Loveland. The suspect at the time, 22-year-old Esteban Vasquez, remained on the scene. A 49-year-old Jeffrey Myler was found dead from multiple gunshot wounds. Police arrested Vasquez. He was initially charged with first-degree murder by extreme indifference. And then several months later, in April of 2024, that charge was downgraded to second-degree murder. And then on January 26th of this year, more than 2 years after the shooting, before the case had gone to trial, by the way, so Mr. Vasquez had this murder charge hanging over his head for 2 years. That second-degree murder charge and a enhancement for commission of a violent crime with a firearm dropped because of findings in the investigation. Kylie Massman, a community engagement specialist for the 8th Judicial District Attorney's Office, said that additional facts and witness interviews determined that a claim of self-defense could not be disproven beyond a reasonable doubt, and because of that, the charge had to be dismissed. In an emailed statement, she said it's important that every investigation always continue to follow the facts where they lead and reassess cases that are filed to ensure that we're acting in the best interest of justice in the community. She added that they appreciate the partnership of the local police department there in Loveland and assuring every stone was overturned in this case. Our condolences go out to the family of Mr. Myler, who experienced a tragic loss. Now, Vasquez is facing several other charges, including controlled substance possession with intent to distribute, imitation of a controlled substance with intent to distribute, and controlled substance possession by a special offender. So, sounds to me, not knowing anything other than the charges that Mr. Vasquez continues to face and the charges that were dropped, this was perhaps a drug deal gone bad. And that Mr. Myler may have actually intended to rob Mr. Vasquez of goods and cash, and Mr. Vasquez then acted in self-defense. I am assuming that was the case. Maybe there were some additional twists and turns involved there. But Vasquez is going to be back in court March 24th in Fort Collins, Colorado. But he will not be facing murder charges. Instead, he will be essentially facing charges of possession with intent to distribute. All right, which brings us to today's good deed of the day, which does not involve any controlled substances that I am aware of. Also does not involve any firearms that I'm aware of. Instead, a co-worker honored for saving a employee's life during a medical emergency at a Lowe's store in Orchard Park, New York. A individual there collapsed, and Jim Schroeder was able to step up and perform CPR on his coworker. This was back in November. Schroeder said it was a beautiful day. Said I had a great mood. Everything was good. I was just doing a four-hour shift. Came in to help put freight away and what have you. I'm sorry. I said that he stepped up. He was actually the individual who had the medical emergency. He said he had just been directed to work in an aisle when he collapsed. He said, Jerry, another coworker, said, Jimmy, take care of the desk and work in aisle 7. He says, I'll be around the corner. Schroeder says it's a good thing he was, because it wasn't 50 minutes after that I hit the floor, suffering from a cardiac arrest. Jerry is Jerry Breen. Breen says, I didn't know what to do, but I knew something had to be done. So I just had to do something. He said he seemed to be struggling, so CPR seemed to be the first thing to do. And apparently it was the right thing to do. Breen was honored with the Heart Saver Hero Award on Wednesday of this week. Megan Verlulik, executive director of the American Heart Association of Buffalo, said the award's really able to celebrate somebody who was a bystander who jumped in and was a lifesaver. Schroeder's daughter, Amanda, on the hand to thank Jerry Breen for his actions, saying, because of you, my dad gets to walk his daughter down the aisle later this year. He gets to hear, I love you, Papa, for my daughter, Grayson. And that's, I got to tell you, I mean, that's huge to be told that somebody gets to experience those moments because you stepped up and you helped. It's great that the American Heart Association gave him the Heart Saver Hero Award, but I imagine that for Jerry Breen, hearing the words from a Schroeder's daughter was probably all the reward or the biggest reward that he received this week. So in the right place, at the right time, willing to help out and step up when needed. Jerry Breen there in Orchard Park, New York, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next week. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com between now and then. We are going to keep you up to date on all of the Second Amendment news that is important to you across the nation. Again, we've got legislative sessions underway in most states. We are seeing some pro-gun bills making progress in places like South Dakota. Just had the suppressor deregulation bill signed into law by Governor Larry Roden there this week. Wyoming mentioned one good bill that died, but we've got several others that are progressing in Wyoming. You've got campus carry on the move in both New Hampshire and soon Louisiana. That session doesn't get underway until early March, but the campus carry bill has already been pre-filed there in the Sportsman's Paradise. And then, of course, we're keeping you up to date on everything going on with the attacks on our right to keep arms as well. And there is no shortage, unfortunately, of those bills to write about. Latest legal efforts as well. John Petrolino was in the courtroom in the Third Circuit in Philadelphia on Wednesday as an en banc panel heard oral arguments in a challenge to New Jersey's Brew and Response Bill, the 25 gun-free zones that were put in place, the insurance mandate, the character references for concealed carry applicants, a number of provisions that Brew and Response will be challenged. And John provides his thoughts on hearing those oral arguments firsthand at Bearing Arms today. Again, we've got a lot more for you, so be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We'll see you back here for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company on Monday. And if you like what you see and hear, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum subscriber. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier you choose, you will be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I got to tell you, that support is greatly appreciated. So thank you very much. Have a great rest of your week. Fantastic weekend. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.